You're listening to
Hot Garbage.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Hot Garbage Podcast, your weekly music playlist. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode and joining us via iTunes, via Stitcher, via Buzzsprout. However you're coming to us, we really appreciate you being here. If you like what you hear, be sure to spread this along to your friends and continue to download these episodes. Leave us a little bit of love when you do so. But thanks for checking us out tonight. My name is Drew. Joining me as always is the mouse to my elephant, my dear friend Andy. Andy, what's good, my friend?
Things are real good.
Things are real good.
It's turning into the summer all of a sudden.
It's summer. It is here. Spent the day at the river today. Was outside all yesterday. Get my tan on. Your kids are in summer camp.
Summer camp? Oh, that's great.
Doing some art.
I've eaten so many sausages.
Oh yeah. It is sausage season.
It is. It's sausage season here at Hot Garbage.
Every week is almost like sausage season here at Hot Garbage. Our silent partner Nate is with us, as he is each and every week, making the sound happen. Tonight, Andy, we had another wonderful live act in the house.
So good.
Amanda Richards and her bandmate Steve from Amanda Richards and the Good Long Wiles were in the house. They played some live tracks for us tonight.
And this was kind of a rare acoustic set. They usually play with a full band with like lap steel and drums and everything.
Yeah. So we got the acoustic guitar. We got the banjo out. Some beautiful harmonies. So that was awesome to hear from them. They've got a new record that's going to be coming out in November that they just finished up. We get a world exclusive from that one that we're playing at the end of the episode today. So
Before we even get into this, though.
Please.
I've got some breaking fast food news that we forgot to drop last week.
Oh, really? I'm shocked.
Everyone's probably already heard about it by now, but the Burger King mac and Cheetos.
I've only heard of it in whispers from you and Nate.
Yes. It's basically
text message whispers.
It's a mozzarella stick made out of macaroni and cheese dipped in Cheetos dust.
So it's basically like a cheese fish stick that fell underneath the refrigerator.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that what you're saying? Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'm waiting for the spicy Cheetos version.
Yeah, that'll be good. Have you tried this one yet?
No, I think you can only get it in Southern California. Mm-hmm. But
and only
on
with
the
a prescription.
It's on the menu at the Mall 205 Burger King on Washington and Stark right there.
Right.
So if anybody in Portland wants to get nasty.
Right. That's the same Burger King where it is actually against the rules for employees to wash their hands. So that is another flavor element.
Well,
that
man,
get
it's all part of the flame broiling. You don't want to, you know, right. You don't clean that grill.
Right.
That's where all the flavor lives.
Exactly. Or if you do, you just don't wash your hands afterward.
Man.
And so, yeah, it's all, yeah, it's part of the new, you know, what are those called in yogurt? The microbiomes, is that what you called them? Yeah, probiotics. Yeah. Probiotic Burger King. You know, if hot diarrhea is healthy, then you're like a regular yogi after you go to Burger King.
Burger King fries are bullshit.
Are they?
Yeah. Out of all the fast food restaurants in the land, the fries at Burger King are fucking the worst. They're so shitty.
What's wrong with them?
They're like this weird, like hollow fried monstrosity. I don't know. They changed them a few years back, and they've just never been the same.
Have you had the chicken fingers or the
chicken fries?
Chicken fries.
Chicken fries are bullshit.
I don't know why I said chicken fingers in such a weird way, as if that was an uncommon phrase, because that's what chicken fingers are called.
I definitely love chicken fingers.
But I was in that moment, I was picturing a cup of like finger-like chicken, and it sounded really disgusting. But chicken fries
suck.
Also they're like, disgusting.
They're too skinny. There's not enough chicken there. You're basically just like getting like these breading sticks with like a strip of chicken in the middle.
Yeah, well, I mean, I give Burger King some credit for constantly innovating and pushing the flame broiled envelope.
They do.
Well, that's good to know. I think that it's important that no matter what my personal feelings are toward Burger King, that we keep our audience always apprised of what's happening out there and new ways to cleanse their colons. So happy to bring that to our audience. And also happy to bring this live music and this interview with Amanda Richards, with Steve from Amanda Richards and the Good Long Wiles. Hope you enjoy this episode of Hot Garbage. what are some hot button issues that we can push to get you going into that? Because sometimes it's
great.
Yeah. We don't have to be positive. We can be very negative.
No, that's all right. I don't need any help in that.
How about now? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
You guys want to give a Steve? Can you give a little whisper in there?
And yeah, just a little whisper. Yeah,
a little whisper.
I'm you know, whispers my thing.
How are we doing?
It's my game.
We're sounding good.
Got some excellent sound, some
sweet ASMR,
some gain going on. Fuck yeah!
So tell us about the new record. I know you guys are in the process of putting together some new music. Tell us how that's going.
It's going.
It's going.
It's going.
We done did it.
Yeah.
It's all done.
It's all finished? Done. It's all done.
Tell us about the record.
Well, it's a kind of a collection of songs that I wrote probably about 7 years ago, sort of thing. It's been a labor of love for me, and then working with Steve on them, it kind of like brought them back to life, sort of thing. Like there's kind of like a lot of like darkness, vulnerability, and yet kind of I don't know, empowerment through it too. I don't know, like this is kind of the first time I've really talked to anybody about the record, so
yeah,
world exclusive.
Yeah, I don't know. What do you have to say about that, Steve? Anything?
Yeah, I watered them and they kind of came back to life, and no, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I'm always
I like this.
I think some people don't have a lot of opportunities to talk about their music in mm-hmm. in a way. So I guess maybe in the songwriting process, how does a song come together? What are you thinking about when you're putting a song together? What is the thing you're emphasizing most?
And, yeah. Well, usually I'm torturing myself emotionally. Steve and everyone else around me. These songs, like it was a really hard thing for me to bring forward. I've actually recorded and re-recorded this same album probably 3 times. And, it was just this, like, it was just hard. It was really hard. And it took us about from the time that we started, again for this last time, it was last year, and then we just kind of finished it up a few weeks ago. It went to mastering, and yeah, it's actually my 6th album, and it's been the hardest thing I've ever done.
What have been the challenges? Why the 3 times that you've recorded these songs?
I think part of it was a perfectionism, and I think part of it too was just like the era of my life that it represented for me. It was like a place that was really hard to go back and revisit, you know.
Do you begin with lyrics or do you begin with the music part of your songs?
It can be both. Mm-hmm. The process for me has been kind of usually I start with a feeling.
Hmm.
And sometimes that feeling comes out as words, and sometimes that feeling comes out as a melody. And it's kind of something that just like moves through me. I don't necessarily have a lot of control over it when it's happening. Anytime that I turn the critic on, it's a good way to just stop the creative process, sort of thing. So I just kind of like whatever is coming up, I just let it move through me, you know. And sometimes it's poetry, and sometimes it's just like a hook or a melody. So
is there an emotional theme to this record?
You know, I think that we're still kind of like vacillating on the album title, but what we're throwing out right now is Tough Ones to Love.
Hmm.
And I think that like the majority of the songs on it for me were like different like labors of love, and sometimes they were people and sometimes they were just things or stories too, you know. I mean, we have yeah, I mean, a lot of it is just kind of a life struggle,
mm-hmm.
sort of thing, and then still like coming out strong on the other side too. So.
What drives you to share those kinds of personal things with other people? Because I could see maybe wanting to have a cathartic artistic experience, but what is it that makes you take that next step to share that with strangers?
I have no idea.
There's no deeper pathology.
Yeah,
to...
I think that's part of the reason that it was so hard for me to want to finish this and to put it out, because I feel like in some ways, like, I can be very, like, vague and double entendre, but I think that this is the most content-wise, like, personal thing that I put out in a long time. Mm-hmm. The last album that I put out was, when it was a Christmas album that I rewrote all of the, 6 or 8 major Christmas songs into minor keys. Like, they're just totally unrecognizably... you know, unrecognizable, like, in the
like
melody.
A dark.
Yes. And
Gothic
a,
folk Christmas.
Something like that.
Like,
it's
a Faulkner Christmas.
And actually, I think it's probably one of the better albums that I've done.
It's my favorite Christmas album ever. I mean, it's my only favorite Christmas album.
Yeah.
Bing Crosby and that
Pretty
one.
Paper, I mean, you know.
Yeah.
The James Brown really, Christmas album's got some merit.
And then before that, I did an album called Play Dead, which was a collection of old school country songs about the zombie apocalypse.
Yeah.
Written from the perspective.
Yeah, you won an independent music award for
that. I did, yes. And so while it was really fun doing that, it wasn't necessarily like not so personal sort of thing. So
was that a shift for you to write about personal things, or was that something you've always done and this is the first time that you maybe packaged it together?
No, I think that I wrote a lot of personal stuff, like, early on, and then just the first couple of albums that I put out, I didn't really know how to put out an album, you know, and so they got out there, and I think that a few people got them and dug it, and that was cool. It was just kind of a process, you know.
Are you hoping for some kind of connection with your listeners? Is there some feedback that you would like to get from these songs that would be emotionally satisfying to you?
I think that really what it is for me is it's just about being able to connect with people. I think that for one, like, exposing yourself, being vulnerable, like, it allows for connection, and that's not something that really... that we get a lot of opportunity for in, like, mm-hmm. day-to-day life. And it's not all just, like, sad songs, you know? It's not really what it's about, and half the time you can't understand what I'm saying anyways, you know? But, yeah, I mean, it's really, like, about a feeling, and for me, like, I don't find really, like, happy, like... music doesn't make me happy. Like, what makes me happy is, like, connecting mm-hmm. to an artist. And so, you know, when I'm going to music for, like, healing or for, you know, whatever would draw me to put on a record, like, it's not necessarily because I want to, like,
it's not to rock the party.
I'm not that kind of person. Yeah. You know, and so my hope is that maybe, you know, other people get that and that we can be friends. I don't know.
Right. Who is an artist that you think, like, that you listen to and like, that you find to be, like, really emotionally honest? Is there one person that they're, I don't know, the things that they convey really connects with you in a personal way?
I would say probably Leonard Cohen. As sure. far as, like, songwriting goes, like, you know, just that kind of style of writing that, you know, he goes into these darker human places, and
I would say Michael Hurley of the Holy Mole Rounders, who still performs around town.
Guy's awesome.
Dude, the way he writes his songs is so conversational. It's so honest. It's crazy. It may not be as, like, as honest, like, it's, like, dark and telling, but, like, a lot of songs about food.
Spaghetti.
For me, like,
fish.
Yeah.
Honesty in your music is just something that you kind of, you either buy it or you don't. I don't think it's really subject matter. I think it can be subject matter independent, but I think that music that I think of as cheesy is the stuff that rings false to me. Whereas it doesn't matter what the genre is or what the message is. There's just a wavelength that certain artists connect with you on that seems real and seems true. And those are the ones that I tend to gravitate toward.
Yeah, I can agree with that. At the same time, like, I can be totally cheesy too.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
You know, I mean, I wrote a country album about the zombie apocalypse. Like, that's pretty cheesy. But
there's a lot of important themes in that.
What's that?
I thought it was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. It rang true to me.
Yeah. Nice.
I believed it.
That was something I would never listen to if I had just heard somebody say, I wrote a country album about the zombie apocalypse. I'd be like, no, I'm not. But, you know, I heard Amanda's album and immediately probably texted her that night or something and said, I love your shit. Like, yeah, this is so good. That was kind of amazing. I'm not even into zombies, you know. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually wasn't really that much at the time either. I wrote it like years ago, even before this whole like zombie thing really took off, and
you were ahead of the curve.
I was. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm about 7 years ahead of the curve, so that's why these songs are 7 years old. So I feel like I should be right on time now.
Yeah, you had really just had to pace them out.
Exactly. That, you were all ready for them. I finally figured it out. Right. But,
you know. Yeah. Well, you guys played some songs for us here in the studio, and we're going to drop them in at least one of them right now. Can you tell us a little bit about the first song that you played tonight?
Okay, so the first song that we played was called Fresh Kill, and it's kind of a song about, like, for me, it was loving somebody, being attracted to somebody that's really not very good for you, and, like, the kind of things that that brings into your life, and just kind of, like, you know, going into a, like, a darker space, you know, basically the... the vultures start to circle when you're standing still, you know, and prey on those with the weakness of will. That's so, yeah, for me, it was like this relationship sort of thing that brought me into a, I don't know if it brought me into a bad space or if I was just in a bad space and I attracted that kind of stuff, you know. So I guess it doesn't sound that romantic when I say it out loud.
But the song sounds romantic. So we're going to listen to it right now. This one's called Fresh Kill.
What's that?
Start that again.
But you're being a jackass. Okay. All right, let's do something. Love was the first. away. Voluntary slaughter to morally decay.
Run, rabbit, run.
You also just heard Ragged Union there from Golden, Colorado. You can check that track out on their website. They have a handful of songs for free download off their new album. And they're going to be playing Spring Summit this year, so if you go into that shit.
Awesome.
So, yeah. It's a husband and wife band.
Yeah.
That'd be so tough.
We were talking about that during the song, about how playing with a loved one might be a stressful situation. But that conversation's lost to the sands of time. Yep, it was a really good one, though.
It was super good.
It was a really good one.
Don't talk about it anymore.
Yeah. No, neither. Real dark.
Did we really even talk about it?
No, it never happened.
No, it never
happened. Steve, I want to ask you something. You are a banjo player. How did you pick up the banjo?
It's kind of impulse, I guess. It was a couple shows in a row that I went to. I think one of them was I'm kind of guessing here. I think it was probably a leftover salmon show and then some sort of some other hippie jam band after that. Then I was in the old guitar shop looking for some tuners for, I think it was for a ukulele, an old ukulele or something busted. And I saw this banjo, kind of like dusty old banjo behind a bunch of other guitars, the way they usually are. And
in the corner?
Yeah, yeah. I just, you know, and I'm like, oh, cool. That thing, I was
just picking and grinning back at you.
Yeah. So I bought it and it was a piece of crap, but I still have it. And it kind of went from there. You know, I plunked around on it for a little bit and played it like some weird sort of way. I kind of still do that, I guess, but I'm going to learn it someday. So
you'll get there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Steve has an enormous collection of banjos.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Is this the first banjo that you're playing here tonight? Is this the...
This one, no.
No, okay.
I wouldn't play that anywhere.
So how long ago was that?
Oh, geez.
6 months ago?
Yeah. 7 or 8, at least.
You've got a lot of talent. You've got a lot of innate ability.
No. You got one of those cool banjos that's like electric that has the body around it like a guitar?
No, I don't.
Oh, man.
Those
are neat.
I don't know. I want one of those. I don't want one. Although I would have one if someone gave it to me, I guess. But
you're not searching for one of those?
I'm not searching for one. I
they look super cool.
I'm always searching for, yeah. Yeah.
How many banjos is too many banjos?
No. Is that a question?
No limits?
No limits.
Infinite banjos?
Well,
infinite
banjos. I guess if you're...
That sounds like a great band name.
I guess you really only need one really nice one, you know? That's what it's about.
Banjos all the way down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then you got a lot of firewood too, and some things that some kind of weapons to throw at people afterwards.
Yeah, have you ever smashed a banjo? You just shred a set and just destroy it on stage.
It seems like they'd be pretty burly. Yeah. You could probably take a good.
No, we've had some people threaten to though. No.
Yeah, yeah. I've felt like doing it, definitely. Sitting on my couch, you know, just kind of working something out. Feel like throwing it out the window sometimes, but. That would hurt. That thing would hurt somebody, though.
Yeah, the banjo you're playing tonight is like a steel banjo.
Yeah, here.
You could cut a person in half. It's like a battle axe.
Steve has this like temporary.
That thing weighs like a good 30
side
pounds.
Project called, what's it called? Foggy Mental Breakdown.
Foggy Mental Breakdown. Yeah.
It's all banjos.
All different tunings. Four different tunings.
Yeah, lots of tunings. Lots of banjos. Lots of pieces and parts. And now we do a bunch of solo stuff, and then we all get together and pretty much. Kind of clear the bar at the end of the show.
Yeah,
you know, three or four banjos playing at once.
That's right.
We don't really practice. We just get together and talk about stuff. Mm-hmm. Talk about banjos,
and then they bring all of their banjos. So yeah. There's like 30 banjos on stage.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, you need like a lot of banjos when you're playing. Right?
Yeah, of course.
I'd like to see the load-in for that. Just a series of like four of you standing in a row. Just
it was the just coolest load-in ever
of banjos.
So the one show where everyone brought every single piece and part of banjo that they own, you know, we set it up at the whole back of the stage is filled with banjos, like, I don't know, 20 plus banjos or something. And, you know, they're sitting
20
there.
20 plus?
Yeah. Well, you know, 20 and a half and another half and another half.
Oh, it wasn't
half,
the plus that I was really questioning. It was just that 20. Yeah. That is a lot of banjos. I thought you were going to say, like, there's 7 banjos.
Everybody bought
which
both
I would
of their banjos.
A lot of banjos. Yeah, but
and
20.
The other banjo players brought their banjos, too.
They were set
a shitload of banjos.
In the other side of the room. No.
Okay, anyway, I'm sorry. I was interrupting your story to be aghast at that number.
like, you know, that was a, probably the most fun I've ever had at a load-in, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, usually you're like, eh, I gotta pull this amp up and stick it on stage, and oh, the bass player's not doing anything. Andy. No, I'm just kidding. Andy kicks ass. But
he's lazy as shit.
No, this is kind of a generic statement. But anyway.
Andy could be any of us.
No, it's just bass players in
He's talking about
now.
Me.
Yeah, I'm a bass player. I'm super lazy. I'm with you.
We could tell.
I guess I'm a bass player.
That's why you brought it up.
Yeah, so all the banjos are up on stage, and I, you know, for some reason, I had to go perfectly place the last one, you know, or something like that. And I look at it, and I'm like, that's awesome. And I turn around, and the other three dudes in the Foggy Mental Breakdown have their iPhones out, and they're taking pictures of the stage already. They're like so happy.
And then you bump the one on the end, and they all fell down in a big long row.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Domino at the end of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Steve brought his banjo tonight, but he actually plays lap steel most of the time.
Oh, I love the lap steel.
So yeah, he kind of brought an acoustic thing tonight, but he's very talented.
What was your first instrument?
Guitar.
Just guitar?
Yeah.
How old were you when you picked up a guitar?
I don't know, 11.
11?
Yeah.
About you, Amanda? When did you start playing music?
About 11. Also.
About 11 as well?
Then 12. Yeah,
and your dad's a musician too, is that right?
Yeah, my dad's side of the family, they're all musicians.
So it took you until 11 still, even with all that family pressure?
Well, you know, my it's kind of a dysfunctional family. I moved up here with my mom when I was 7, and so I didn't really grow up with them. They're all country western musicians, and they all only play guitar and sing and write songs. So it wasn't like a family band sort of thing. And we're all like really weirdly competitive too. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't something that was ever like necessarily like, it was nurtured in like a really weird way. Like, in a like you just have to do that because it's in your blood. But it wasn't like a, here, let me show you how to do this and make you good at it. It's kind of hard to explain, but yeah, it's just a little odd.
Did you resist that then? Was there some sort of bristling against that expectation?
Well, you know, I didn't grow up with it. I was here in Oregon at the time. So like my dad's side of the family, they're all like in Orange County, Southern California. And so I was around it all the time, being around like, you know, folk music, Western music, and, you know, seeing adults like play and perform. And, you know, I was put on stage like as like a really little kid. So like my mom has terrible stage fright, but she loves to sing. So she can only do like really drunk karaoke, but she always wanted to be a performer. She couldn't do it. So she put me on stage when I was really little so that I wouldn't be scared to
right.
do it. So that was like probably the greatest gift, was not having that stage fright. Like I feel very comfortable on stage. But yeah, coming up to Oregon, I learned maybe 3 or 4 songs on my own, and I was very shy about playing it in front of people.
Sure.
So I taught myself finger style guitar because I didn't want people to hear me practicing sort of thing. So which ended up being a benefit too, because that, you know, it's just a little bit different the way that I play with my fingers, and it feels really natural to me. So,
do you remember the first song that you wrote?
I was probably like 5, and I think it was in the back of the car. And I don't know if I wrote it or if it was a Disney song. I really.
It was that good.
Yeah.
You know?
It was
I can sing it for
Disney,
you now,
but
it may or
first.
May not be copyright infringement. I really don't know. But I've always made up songs when I was little, and even like now, I mean, if it didn't just irritate, well, it does irritate everybody around me, I'm sure, but I will just like kind of narrate my day through song.
In song.
Yeah, and pretty much like mostly my cat is the main, like,
yeah,
you
watch
know,
out for that album.
Of that.
Singing to my cat with Amanda Richards.
Yeah, no, that's, he has, that's, he's got dozens of songs, so. But.
Well, you guys also brought some music to share tonight. What is what's some of the stuff that you brought? What would you like to play for us today?
So one of the things we brought is Marlon Williams, and is this a Marlon and Delaney
song? It's a so Delaney Davidson and Marlon Williams, they're New Zealand artists. Sort of folk country alt sort of stuff.
They're really badass.
Yeah, they're pretty badass.
We like them a lot.
Extra badass. But yeah, super influence of both of us, and influence, and just, you know, we just really like their stuff. So they did 3 volumes of country tunes. You know, it's called Sad But True. But so this is off of Sad But True. And this is I think it's a Marlon song.
I thought it was a co-write, but
maybe it's a co-write. Yeah, you know, I'm not quite sure, but it's on. Yeah, it's on that album, the duo album from them, and which has great musicians backing them up. But it's called "The Ballad of Minnie Dean."
Yeah, it's this really I think it's based off of a true story about this woman that people would bring their
babies
to her to care for. She was kind of like the mother of the town, like, you know, back when women couldn't have abortions and maybe couldn't keep their babies, and they gave them their babies, and some of them didn't make it, and some of them may have died at her hand. We don't really know, but she was basically like one of the first women like hanged for murder.
Oh, all right.
With little babies.
So. Excellent.
Well, it's a beautiful song.
Let's check this out. That's all awesome, right, man. Here it is. So I'm going to tell a little story. So I was at Salvia Island today. It was a beautiful Portland summer day. So I went out to the river, and I don't like the heavily populated early area. I like the clothing optional area little space to breathe. I'm not personally a big nude guy myself, but it's a nicer part of the beach.
That's where I go to.
So I was there, had a wonderful day, getting in and out of the water, did a lot of reading, had a few beers, wonderful time. But we were sitting next to a pair of gentlemen that seemed to have gotten pretty wasted, and one of them vomited nude into the sand
right in front of himself,
right in front of legs? Right, like he was taking a nap and he came to in time to like lean forward and vomit into the sand totally nude. And he had kind of pulled himself off of his towel, like not stood up or tried to get away from the scene. He just kind of like crab walked to the end of the towel, leaned forward and vomited on the sand between his legs, totally nude.
Wow.
It is one of the least dignified things I've ever seen a human being do. Just a total public nude beach vomit right there. So
I've never seen that.
Yeah,
I've been on the like giving side of that, but I've never seen it.
You've done that. You've nude vomited at the beach, but
well, not nude. On you
when they're nude.
I used to do a lot of like serious tubing. Like I tubed hard as fuck. We would drink. It was a 2-hour float, and I knew I had only so long to get drunk. So I would not be naked, but I puked on a lot of people's beaches, you know, and floated my way to safety.
That's a great quote. I think I've puked on a lot of people's beaches.
That's like your autobiography.
Because of people like me, yeah. They've deputized everyone on that river. And if somebody gets on your property, you can call the police.
Yep.
Because of me.
No vomiting.
All over the place. Hey, you puking? No. What are you doing?
Get out of here. Float on. No, but this would be the equivalent. What this guy did would be the equivalent of, instead of you taking the few steps necessary to paddle over and vomit on a beach, that you just vomited where you floated. Because that's what he did. He didn't.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
He was 10 paces from some trees. He was, you know.
Do you think he managed to miss his own junk, or he was? He might have caught a splash.
Yeah, it was. I know this is an audio medium, so I'm just picturing me sitting on my ass in the sand. My legs are stretched out before me, and I'm just leaning forward and vomiting down between my knees.
Wow. You know? Yeah, there's a definite splash back there. That guy better jump in the river.
But he had been on his, he had been facing dip, away guy. From the side of the blanket that he had vomited, face down. So he got himself up and turned around and up to ass. He just didn't take it that next step and even just
What would you have this poor drunk man do? Dig a hole?
You think
I'm just happy the guy didn't choke and die right next to you.
I think if he had just gotten to his feet, I would have been a little happier if he had been nude puked from his feet. And he had his hands on his waist, you know, and he was just,
I think you actually like dodged a bullet there. Cause you might've just got like a big hairy butthole. Like,
No doubt. It's yeah. And then everyone vomits in a train from seeing that hairy butthole. No, I just think like I felt bad for him. Obviously he bit off more than he could chew today, but I feel like that was the least humane way that he could vomit just right there. And he didn't really. You're in like a giant human litter box. He didn't even really like roll it up.
Yeah, what was the after action there? Did he bury it at all?
A little bit. Well, there was a second time. There was a second session later where I saw him scoot forward. Again, he wasn't even lifting his ass. He was just sliding his ass forward. And I saw him two hands scooping a bucket for himself in the sand.
Man. Okay.
But it was, you know, maybe 10 degrees to the right of his first vomiting.
You know, if there was a dog around, maybe they would have taken care of it for him.
I'm never going to the
topper. That's usually what happens to me.
I'd watched a dog eat this nude man's vomit,
if the drunk guy would have been like, all right, where's the nearest dog? There he is.
Yeah.
I could not handle that. I'm a sympathetic puker. And
you would have blown, huh?
We recently, I was in Hawaii a couple weeks ago, and we went on this little boat ride, and I love sailing, but like there's not a lot of sailing in Hawaii because like the water is just too rough,
right?
And there was probably like 30 people on this, and like me and my husband were the only one of two couples that did not puke, and I had to hang out on the front part of the boat, which is the choppiest part, because I'm like, I can handle the seasickness, but I cannot handle like the whole rest of the boat puking. It was Yeah.
And when you're on one of those kind of boats, those chartered boats where like half the people are vomiting, they're always vomiting into a plastic bag is also not very graceful.
It's pretty crazy.
Because it's not like they're like spreading it wide open and getting some clearance. It's often just dripping down the inside of the bag, and it's a barely contained bladder of their own vomit. Well, and when you multiply that by like 20 people on the boat, it is repulsive.
Yeah. So my husband Joe, he knows like I'm a sympathetic puker, and so he knew that everybody was puking, and he like kept it from me because I was just kind of enjoying myself, like having a cocktail, and I'm like, oh, I'm gonna go back to the back of the boat, and I don't even really like notice like that there's these
I barely smell
little
this
blue
entire
bags
vomit.
Like of people they had these. They're kind of discreet looking bags. And then I got real interested kind of in one all of a sudden. Like, what is that guy? Is he hyperventilating? What is going on here? And then I'm like, oh, dear
is
God.
Is he eating a walking taco without a fork?
Yeah. He's just taking a little modest puke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a gentleman's boat puke. But he was wearing his clothes. That's the thing. It's just. That's the final straw.
And not right in a beach in a crowd of people.
Well, there's nothing more, in a way, there's really nothing more vulnerable about a human than when they're vomiting. It's a downtime. It reflects a poor decision or an illness. And if you do it in public, you're just exposed. But to be literally naked, there's nowhere to hide. Just
Man,
in front of God
that's
and
the
everybody.
Second puke story I've heard about Savvy Island this year.
What was the first?
Leland from Mr. Bones was talking about like how he threw up
at
Savvy
Island. Oh,
that's
right. He did throw up at Savvy Island. Yeah.
How much puke is in that sand?
It's mostly puke.
Yeah. It's
puke and it's bird shit.
Puke bits.
Which is chunks of rocks holding it together.
That's what why do you there's think so many sand bugs is, there. Steve?
Yeah. it's just clotted
beach is mostly
puke. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Some rocks and sticks in there.
Mm-hmm. Just to throw you off the scent.
Yeah. I thought it was like clumping litter, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Heavy clump. We've talked about clumper. That on the show before. Yeah. Andy, you want to play some music for us?
That one's a heavy clumper. Yes.
What do you got?
Please.
I'm going to switch it up and play a track off the new Mike Bogan and Last Artful Dodger EP.
Oh, fantastic.
It's called Rare Treat. I think that's also the name of the group. It's produced by Neil Vantali, and he's a pretty awesome producer, man. This shit's good. This is the first track off it. It's called Pop.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Pop. Bad to roll all night. Uber lift, energy to drive. Dry it to your shift. Stick it, move your mic. Stick it through your up truck and do your grinding. Yes, fucked up. Yes, that way. Long road from a bad day. From Van Nuys to the top is. Leave them dust cause. See no carpets. 100 miles per minute. And I don't mind who with it. Long as I finish 100 miles per minute, and I don't mind who wins. First, finally finish.
Adderall all night, got promethazine and that liquid Sprite. It ain't activist, it's some average shit, but I still suggest you don't drink or drive. I've been mostly high all my life, I've been doing it the right way. I'm on the grind, on the rise, some just might say. And I just kinda go along when the nights fade. And I do a lot of wrong in the right place. For Christ's sake, what's my path of purpose? I've had my chances, never scratched the surface in that padded bra. She don't look bad at all, and she kneels it stand like a Catholic church would a good dude, right? She probably keep me up all night.
100 miles per minute, and I don't mind who with it. Long as I finish. 100 miles per minute, and I don't mind who with it. First, finally finish.
What's the name of that album?
Rare Treat.
Rare Treat, yeah. That's hot.
Yes.
Hot shit. And Mike Bogan's been playing a pickathon this year, coming up at the end of July, first weekend of August. So check him out there.
Sounds perfect for pickathon.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's right in the pocket for him. What kinds of things were you guys listening to when you were teenagers?
Huh. Slayer, Iron Maiden.
Really?
Heck yeah.
That's awesome. I love Slayer.
You know, Death, Morbid Angel.
How did you come from that to like the bluegrass country folk?
Oh, it's like the next thing you listen to.
So just half step over.
Yeah. Yeah. Usually after Morbid Angel, you go to pretty much like you know, Earl Scruggs.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure in the liner notes, you just kind of follow you know the bands they've
what they were into.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you could tell,
and it goes like Deicide, Bill Monroe.
Yeah. I mean, lots of
or like Napalm Death, Kentucky Gentlemen.
Yeah.
Two sides of the same coin, really.
Mm-hmm. We might hit a little Waylon on the way there, but, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you want to take a, you know, circuitous route, you want to.
No, I you know, I was born in the late 70s, so I kind of came up, you know, with the 80s music, but and my sister was kind of into heavier metal, and I, you know, I kind of did that for a while. I was like, you know, Police, I like, you know, stuff like that, but you know, by the time I was in junior high, I was listening to heavy stuff and scaring my mom and stuff. And probably, and she was probably worried, but you know, end of junior high, I was getting into like, I found the Mamas and Papas records and the Willie Nelson stuff under the, you know, stuff that wasn't really like, hey Steve, you should check this out. She should have said that a while, you know, like once I started listening to Death, she should have said, you know, you should probably listen to some Jethro Tull, I got a record right here for you, you know. But she didn't say that, so I found it, and you know, got into that, and then I, you know, kind of progressed into like jazz and blues and world, lots of different sort of Afro-Cuban world music, salsa stuff, and kind of like folk and stuff like that was always kind of there, you know, at that point, you know, by the time I hit the Mamas and the Papas and the,
yeah,
you know, you know, Led Zeppelin and all that stuff.
You really kind of took it all in. You were kind of all over the board there.
Oh yeah, you know, it's kind of funny. My, was it? We had a band in junior high. That, you know, of course, you know, we won the Battle of the Bands, and no, we were we did. But
junior high Battle of the Bands.
Yeah,
is,
of course, it's
a
big
critical.
Deal. You know, big
that
deal.
It is a big deal.
We got a T-shirt.
Yeah, you can wear that T-shirt every single day.
Yeah,
no one can take.
Of course,
that
I did. You know, I loved.
What kind of music school. Was this? What kind of music was your?
It was very band? Eclectic. It was, I think, a Dimension, except we spelled it Dementition.
Oh yeah,
yeah, my mom loved that too. So, maybe by that time we spelled it the right way, but very eclectic.
Your mature second album,
eclectic metal. Very influenced by a lot of stuff. But anyway. Yeah, that's kind of my progression.
Yeah.
Now I'm playing pretty songs and about sadness and stuff.
Yeah.
What were you listening to, Amanda?
Well, actually, like, you know, I grew up around here, and I could not let anybody know that I liked country music. There was no way.
It was like,
and
being a Christian.
Oh yeah, it was. That was really, so I did that. I tried to get as far away as I could from that, and really the only music scene in Portland at the time was like punk mostly, and so, like, you know, being 15-16, just like a lot of underground stuff then, you know, like Crass, Dead Kennedys, things, that was the stuff that I started getting into, Nirvana, but then kind of went into a little bit of goth phase with The Cure and Depeche Mode and that sort of thing. So this is like 15, 16. I kind of just listened to
that's
everything.
That's the right time for Depeche Mode
or
The Cure.
And
that's,
that's
the sweet spot.
Got my dose of that.
So, but I was also, you know, I mean, it was, their time had long passed when I was enjoying them. But yeah, I also like didn't have the same kind of access to music that like we do now. Like, I mean, it's really interesting. Like, if you hear a band, you can just go and look them up on YouTube, you know. But for me, like getting a hold of like new music when I was a teenager, like we didn't have a lot of money. I couldn't just go, you know, buy any CD that I wanted, you know. So it's like, okay, well, what's on the radio, and not liking it enough to like go in and seek it out, but like, you know, finding older mediums, listening to cassettes and records and stuff that you could pick up for kind of cheap. So, you know, I actually like, I listened to folk music and 70s rock and roll and, you know, like just really eclectic stuff. But, you know, my heroes are like Leonard Cohen and Tom Waits, and that's, you know, kind of what I was, you know, like I remember being like 16 and like listening to Leonard Cohen every single night and not being able to fall asleep until like the last song played. So
sorry to put you in the spot here, Drew. Okay. How did you feel about Leonard Cohen? He's universally renowned as one of the most amazing songwriters and singers, but he's got a very unique gravelly voice, which you tend to not like.
Well, I'm Leonard Cohen. I'm fine with that. I recognize his songwriting prowess, and I feel like his place in the canon is earned, I think. And his voice doesn't bother me. Like Tom Waits, I mean, I was going to have you give me the pitch for Tom Waits because I just can't get past it. I can't get past that.
That is the pitch.
The pitch is that voice?
It's Tom Waits is a unique individual, and then the more you dig into it, the more layers the guy's got. The guy's a fucking amazing songwriter, and he writes from the heart where it's like a very
piece of
art.
Oh, I know. I know. I believe he is like sort of properly perceived by mass culture. I'm not saying that's a barometer of right and wrong. It's just I don't enjoy his music necessarily, but I don't think he's overrated or full of shit or anything like that. I feel like he is rightfully in his respected place. It's just not music that I've ever found accessible
to
me.
So I feel like with Tom Waits, like he has such a huge body of work, you know, mm-hmm. that, like, you can't just like step into it in any given place and be like, oh, I am and have an opinion about him, because like you need somebody to hold your hand and be like, what do you like, you know, and then like put you into Tom Waits.
Is there a Tom Waits for everybody?
I think that there could be, yeah. I mean, like, you know, like his early stuff is more like lounge singer sort of thing, like almost like a twisted Sinatra type storytelling. And but what got me, and I think that, you know, you guys might even hear it too, like with the way that Steve plays lap steel on some of the songs. The song that made me really like turn my head and pay attention to Tom Waits was off of the album Rain Dogs. Like that album is what got me into him initially. But Clap Hands, like that song, and I didn't bring it tonight, but maybe we can look it up, because
yeah,
it
I
is
love that song. It's a really good song.
A really cool song, and
it's a very rhythmic song.
And
it's
Mark Ribot, who plays guitar on that, he has this really great guitar sound, but what he's playing, it's so unmelodic and yet like so interesting. Like I'm just like, wow, how is this person playing something that sounds so simple, but it's like really I don't know, it makes you feel something. Huh. You know, and it's not and that's what I love about Tom Waits too. It's like he captures a feeling, and it makes I don't know, you go somewhere with it. And then his latest works too, like I'm continually like drawn into what he's doing. Like, you know, some of it's just like garbage can noises, like industrial and like, you know, but it creates like a scene. It takes you to a place, you know, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah. See, I think that's a really interesting argument for him. I'm always a little suspicious when people say, oh, you really have to know a lot of context to enjoy this. You know, which is kind of what you were saying, is, you know, you have to have a little bit of a little bit of a flavor for what you're getting into before you can really even encounter it in the right way.
Well, I think that, you know, people now, I think, are listening to music in a very, very different way than how we have like traditionally.
That's
you
true.
Know? And so like we're kind of used to just wanting one song to have everything and represent everything to us, and the artist, and there's no like it's hollow, like there's no relationship there, whereas like I feel like Tom Waits is an artist that you have a relationship with or you don't, you know, like maybe you like one of his songs but you probably wouldn't just like one of his songs, like
right.
he's somebody that like becomes like a part of your life. Hmm. You know, like to me, like I'm really like old school in that I love albums. Like I don't usually just decide I like an artist because of like one song they do. I want to hear many songs that they do, and like, you know, and get to know them, and it's just like a different way of experiencing music. But I, you know, I mean, maybe it's obsolete, but that's kind of the way that we're still doing it. It's the way that I connect to music too, and with art. It's like, you know, having that album experience, like this is, you know, 45 minutes, half hour or whatever of just like really digging in and and seeing what's in somebody's head.
Well, yeah, and so yeah, obviously absolutely. You've had like a Christmas album and a zombie themed album. Outside of those kind of very specific styles, are you very conscious of how you assemble an album and how it collectively comes together?
Well, you know, the first album I ever recorded, I actually did in somebody's laundry room. I had no idea what I was doing, you know, and I thought, well, I'm just going to do a song from like every genre, you know, because I didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up, yeah. sort of thing. And so it's like, I've got some country, some rock, some bossa nova, some all, and that's not like, it's kind of hard to connect to people that way, you know, and I think that it has really like taken me a long time to like figure out how to like who I am and what do I sound like and why is it important and why should anybody care, you know.
What are the answers to those questions? Do you have answers that you have arrived at over all these years?
Well, you know, I'm still figuring it out.
That's fair.
But you know, I think that I've had a lot of experiences, you know. I've had a very interesting, challenging life, you know. I've basically just decided to do really stupid things just for the sake of having a good story to tell, you know. And I feel like there's some value in that, you know, like it's something to draw from, to be able to connect to more like other humans.
Yeah. Yeah. That's something that, yeah, never mind.
See, as I get older, I feel like I'm going in the opposite direction. I'm pulling away from humanity one person at a time.
No, I get that, but I get that because I've like, yeah. I spent almost 2 years in isolation. My husband and I moved to Guatemala City, and lived there for 2 years, and for we were robbed at gunpoint 3 times in the Whoa. First 8 months that we were there.
Yeah, oh, shit.
And so after That's that, crazy. I did not leave my apartment for over a year.
Wow.
Yeah. And it took me like a really long time to like get used to being around people again. This was a few years ago, so it's a very like strange thing, you know. Sure. But I also I got into some acting classes. And that actually was like better than therapy. Like it really like made me value like some of these experiences that I could take, you know, knowing what that's like and being able to put myself like in another position and like relate to it through some of these other experiences. Like,
yeah, absolutely. You know.
That seems like a very shocking way to reintegrate yourself to other people by like performing in front of them.
Oh, I've never like, I don't have an agent. I don't have headshots. I just go to the classes.
Right,
I
right.
It's just a fun thing that I do.
Interesting.
You know?
Yeah.
But I'm, you know, I'm performing music.
Right. I was going to say, yeah, music is another extension of this kind of process that you're describing there. It's a way to connect without, you know, being directly in someone's life.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, the second song you played for us tonight is definitely drawn from your own personal experiences. Can you tell us a little bit about that song?
Oh, Lame Tattoos?
Yes.
It's just kind of a, yeah, almost a love song, not quite mm-hmm. sort of thing. Like it could have been a love song, but it wasn't. And yeah, I mean, it was based off of real experiences and I was just kind of trying to be cheeky, I guess, you know.
Excellent. Well, it sort of predates the hipsterism of Portland. So once again, you were ahead of the curve. But let's listen to Lame Tattoos.
Smart. But all the books you
So much for being on Hot Garbage today. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
The new record is coming out soon. What's the best way for people to find information about that and the other stuff you guys are working on?
So you can go to thegoodlongwiles.com or amandarichards.net. Just make sure you go to .net though and not .com, because amandarichards.com is a drag queen website. And she's also a redhead, so it's very confusing.
Check net. That out though. It's really cool.
I mean, as another thing to explore. Well, definitely go check out all your music. When's the new record? Is it out? Is it available?
No, it'll actually be out in November.
November, okay. Yeah. We will let people know as that gets a little bit closer, but check out the websites to find a little bit more information. Thanks again for sharing some awesome music and hanging out with us tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
It was great.
And thank all of you for listening to this episode of Hot Garbage. We really, really appreciate you joining us each and every Thursday when you get new episodes via iTunes, Stitcher, Buzzsprout, etc. Please also, we would always love to hear from you. You can write in the show at hotgarbagepodcast@gmail.com. That's H-A-U-T-E, garbagepodcast@gmail.com. And Andy, why don't you take us home with something hot?
This is a track by a Camas band called Mount Joy.
Oh, excellent.
They're really good. It's called Barry Bonds. It's off of their EP. You can get this on Bandcamp. Check it out.
For Amanda Richards and Steve and Andy and Nate, this is Drew. We'll see you next week on Hot Garbage. Say it ain't so.
you can be sure.
To end the show so I can pee.
Fuck.